Just kidding. We've had a couple of difficulties the last couple of weeks. I, too, welcome Jim and Sally with us today, the previous pastor. For those of you who do not know, he's here vacationing. I'm glad he is here. Enjoy reconnecting with him. We've been journeying through Jonah, and today marks the last of this brief sermons on the prophet Jonah. Quite a challenging, I mean, this one in particular, again, took me a long time to put this one together. You go one way, and then you have a turnaround. And so, maybe a little bit convoluted, but we hope that you can keep... let's review the story thus far. You know, we saw Jonah receive God's call, and immediately he does just the opposite, runs the other way. God pursues him. And eventually sends a fish. The fish rescues Jonah. And Jonah, in chapter 3, we did not read last time, is vomited onto shore, and then he begins his journey. He hears God's words once again. For the second time, Jonah hears God calling him. Now, don't we just love second chances? Especially when you're the recipient. We just love second chances. We don't like to give them, but we like to receive them. So Jonah hears the word, and then he sets out. This time, headed to Nineveh. A great city, we are told. Big city. The biggest city around. It would be like, not so much Manchester, no Boston, but New York City. The big time. You know, 12 million people, right? 9 of them in that little island of Manhattan that I served as a pastor, right, where immediately around the church, a quarter mile, kilometer, mile radius, 550,000 people. Lots of people. So he goes there. Now notice again, if you read the chapter 3 and you compare it to chapter 1, in chapter 1 he says, go to that great city because its wickedness has risen up to me. This time, all it says is, go to the great city. Nothing about wickedness is mentioned. It's important to what's going to happen now. And so, Jonah gets there, and being the prophet that he is, walks in for 3 days, preaching. Rather brief message. You can just imagine. Yet 40 days... and Nineveh will be destroyed. You've all been to cities where you have doomsday prophets, right? Walking around. The world is near. Repent. May 21st, 2012, it was going to end. Remember those signs everywhere across the nation? I'm still here, by the way. Hasn't ended. But it was, right? I mean, 40 days in just a brief time. And you can imagine that possibly... Jonah, being a good preacher that he is, probably is making sure that there's no note of hope in his message. You will be destroyed, okay? You will go to hell. There's no hope for you. You're doomed. That's his message. And wouldn't you know it? Jonah lives the dream of every single minister. Right? Every single one of the city's inhabitants, everyone believes in God. I mean, as a pastor, I mean, as a preacher, I mean, that's a dream come true. I mean, you wish you, everybody in, never mind Windham, it's too small, the Merrimack Valley would hear the message. And then the problem for us would not be one or two services, but what we do with 4 or 5 services. Right? You wish that. But that's Jonah's problem. Now, of course, we saw earlier in chapter 1, the sailors repented. Remember, they came to God in great rejoicing. Right? Jonah is rescued by the fish. And what does he do? He rejoices. He sings a psalm of thanksgiving, as we saw the last week. What's his reaction this time, I wonder? What would be his reaction to this event? They believe God. They declare a fast, all of them, from the greatest to the least, put on sackcloth. When the news reached even the king, President Obama, he rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. In other words, you have the king stepping down into the dust. Then he issued a proclamation, executive order, by the decree of the king and his nobles. Do not let any man or beast, herd or flock, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways. Let's stop being bad. Let's be good. And their violence. Sounds good, right? Who knows? God may relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. So in other words, they pray. Maybe God will be merciful unto us. And wouldn't you know it, everyone believes. They all turn back. Well, like I said, see, I got misguided by the appeal of that. Fasting, sackcloth, all of those signs of an inward change that's going on. And then we're told, when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he had compassion and did not bring upon them the destruction. Now, you see the little there. Literally, the word destruction in Hebrew is the evil that God was going to do. But there's going to be a play on the word evil here. Who really is evil in this story? He had threatened. So, Jonah is successful. Everyone believes, and they all turn to God. And now, let's read what his reaction is going to be. What is his reaction? How would you react? As a pastor, I mean, I'll be overjoyed. But let's see Jonah's reaction, shall we? Today's lesson, chapter 4. But it greatly displeased Jonah, and he became angry. He prayed to the Lord and said, "Please, Lord, was not this what I said while I was still in my own country? Therefore, in order to forestall this, I fled to Tarshish. For I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, and one who relents concerning calamity. Therefore now, Lord, please take my life from me, for death is better to me than life." The Lord said to him, "Do you have good reason to be angry?" Then Jonah went out from the city and sat east of it. There he made a shelter for himself and sat under it, in the shade until he could see what would happen in the city. So the Lord God appointed a plant, and it grew up over Jonah to be a shade over his head to deliver him from his discomfort. And Jonah was extremely happy about the plant. But God appointed a worm when dawn came the next day, and it attacked the plant, and it withered. When the sun came up, God appointed a scorching east wind, and the sun beat down on Jonah's head, so that he became faint and begged with all his soul to die, saying, "Death is better to me than life." Then God said to Jonah, "Do you have good reason to be angry about the plant?" And he said, "I have good reason to be angry, even to death." Then the Lord said, "You had compassion on the plant for which you did not work and which you did not cause to grow, which came up overnight and perished overnight. Should I not have compassion on Nineveh, the great city, in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know the difference between their right and left hand, as well as many animals?" This is the word of the Lord for today. So it displeased Jonah. So what we will do, as well, tell in the next 20 minutes or so, go through this a little bit more detail. Three parts: Jonah, consumed by evil. Secondly, typically, God, the Lord, pursues Jonah once again. And then the Lord explains why he is the way he is. Let's look at this. Jonah consumed by evil. Jonah is a displeased prophet. The opening sentence immediately informs the reader that Jonah is not rejoicing about what's going on. Literally, the verse says, "Then it was very wicked to Jonah." In other words, Jonah is saying, bad God. You did bad. I know you better than you know yourself. That was not a nice thing to do. It displeased. In other words, what pleases God displeases Jonah. You probably think, Al, really? Say that? Yes. Great displeasure. Now, the word displeasure, like I said in Hebrew, is the word wicked. It seemed wicked to him. You wouldn't dare do that. That was a great wickedness as consumes Jonah, as takes control of him. Now, what you should do sometime when you get a chance, read through the book. It's a very brief book. And you'll see how the word evil wickedness is highlighted for you. In verse 7 of chapter 1, for example, the sailor cast lots. Remember that? We preached about that. In order to find out who brought out this calamity, the storm, the word calamity is ra'ah, evil, wicked. The same word. The same word. Then, in verse chapter 3, the king of Nineveh issues the decree that we read to give up their evil ways. Same Greek, Hebrew word again. And their violence. For who knows? God may relent and with compassion turn from his fierce calamity. Evil again. So you can see that he's playing around with this word. And then, of course, God repented of doing that evil. God repented of doing that evil thing that he promised that he was going to do. Now, in chapter 4, we find that that wickedness that has departed from the sailors, departed from the Ninevites, now finds itself lodged squarely on God's messenger. The man ordained, appointed, selected, the man that the PNC selects to be your next pastor. I hope that, but you don't play around. Right? I mean, that wickedness now rests on the man of God. You can see where the story is headed, don't you? Don't you? If you were God, how would you react to Jonah's displeasure? Can you imagine? Either you work for somebody, you report to somebody, they report to you. Suppose you are the supervisor, and one of your employees comes to you and says, you know, I don't like how the way you do your job, boss. This is how you ought to do it. And being kind-hearted, say, maybe you start looking somewhere else. I'll give you a chance, right? I mean, he's an electrician, I'm not. If I tell him how to wire things, well, I don't know anything about wiring, right? I know there's positive and negative, don't I mean which is which. That's why they have signs there. Right? I mean, what would you do? What would you do if you were running service companies, you know, when you call in the answer, what is it called? I mean, I had it in my mind. I worried he had to, I was going to switch into Spanish all of a sudden. And somebody, customer service, that's the word. Customer service company. And you have an employee that when they call, what do you want? Oh, I have a problem with my computer. Obviously, you're not smart enough to have bought this product. What would you do with such a customer service representative? Give him a promotion? That's Jonah. See, I mean, that's Jonah. I mean, what would you do? Again, if you know that the verse that he just quoted, you know how God would react, right? The way you would expect him to react to you if you were Jonah. Right? And Jonah has a theological argument. I mean, that's what's baffling. I mean, Jonah's theology is, let me tell you, sound. He knows his tradition. He knows his Bible. He knows what makes his community of faith who it is. In our Reformed tradition, we would say he's a good Reformed theologian. He knows that God is compassionate. He knows. He even quotes it. Exodus 37. 34, excuse me. The next slide should come up. And he passed, and this is a passage that's dear to the Jews. The Israelites had committed the blunder of the golden calf. God had forgiven them, and now he has a second chance. And Moses asked to see God. God says, you can't see me, so now God is going to pass by with a promise. And he passed, that he is God, passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to 1,000 generations, and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Forgiven. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of their fathers to the third and fourth generation. See, Jonah likes the last part of the verse, doesn't he? He punishes the wicked, but he forgets the other one. You see how the text balances it out? That we saw, we evangelical Christians say God punishes to the second and third generation, but he blesses to the thousands. In other words, compassion and mercy always outweigh God's mercy. God's compassion. Always. God. So you can tell how he's going to react. God, that is. To God, don't you? So, good theological argument. I mention that because we evangelicals, and I consider myself one, and one who teaches at a seminary, like to use theological argument a lot against people. Throw verses, our theology, and what it means. Especially when it condemns others. And we forget about this God that is a little different than what we would do. So the question is, what would you do? Well, poor Jonah. Poor Jonah. Jonah is completely consumed by evil. Again, look at it again, if I may. He then decides that he's going to tell God how to run his business. He has a death wish. I would rather die. I mean, this is again, I mean, he hit the jackpot as a preacher. Right? I mean, why would you want to commit suicide after that? I mean, why would you want to die? I mean, you're it. You can imagine. You know, you're in like flint, as they say. You have a mate. He has a death wish. He is self-willed. Everything centers on him. Like the old Ptolemaic understanding, right, of the universe. That the earth is the center of everything and the whole universe rotates around it. Well, for Jonah, he is the center, right? Again, look at that, those verse that I quoted there in verse. We act a lot like him, very much like him, constantly talking about ourselves, right? We are probably good Christians, good understanding of the Trinity, the holiest of Trinity, I, myself, and I. Right? I come first. Myself is next. And then, of course, if one or two doesn't work, there's me. That's the way we operate, especially when it comes to looking at God's divine favor. We are only concerned for ourselves. So again, the question is, what would you do? Well, let's see what God does. God pursues Jonah. That's what he does. But first, look at unjustified anger. God begins with a simple question for Jonah. And you can just hear the tone, right? This is not so much Charlton Heston doing the voice of God as in the Ten Commandments. This is more like the voice of Winnie the Pooh. Do you really have a good reason to be angry? Like not a booming, frightening voice, but a gentle, right? Like I said, like Winnie the Pooh. Do a YouTube search about Winnie the Pooh's guy doing Darth Vader. Very funny. It is. Very funny. The same voice, same diction. Very funny. I actually thought of playing it for this message. Right? Very calmly. Do you have good reason? This rhetorical question implies what? That Jonah should have a good reason to rejoice. Because God has shown compassion. For it is good that Yahweh grace is not limited geographically or ethnically only to Israel and only to Jonah, but is available to all people who believe in God. See, he should be rejoicing. He's sulking, pouting. Jonah responds by doing what? He goes silent. Notice that, right? He goes out east side of the city, sits up on a hill. Actually, this is near the Tigris-Euphrates River, not very hilly. So, up there somewhere. So he sits, creates a little shelter, you know, Middle East, probably summertime, August, a little hot. So he creates a little shelter. It's a silent, you know, this is a passive-aggressive, I am not going to listen to you, and I will do what I want to do. And he sits down, and then, surprises, surprises, he says, the text tells us, to find out what was going to happen in the city. Wait a minute. Doesn't he already know? Well, why is he? He just sits there. He responds in silence. The king of Nineveh stepped down, right, from his throne and sat upon a heap of ashes. And Jonah goes up and creates his own little throne. Notice how self-willed he is, right? I will do things my way. I kind of like to think that Jonah is simply looking at that opportunity to give God a second chance. I'm going to sit here, God, to see if you're going to do what I said you were going to do. I said it shall be destroyed. So now, he is asked to, sorry, I lost my place here. He's asked to sit there and look for God to do what he wants to do. I like to think that Jonah sits out here looking at Nineveh over there and he's telling God, I'll give you an option. Choose. Destroy them or destroy me. Remember, he asked him to. It's better for me to die. He gives God the option. Isn't that kind? Isn't that kind of him? How godly, huh? Well, Jonah, of course, turns, sits down, and now God gives him an object lesson. Now, again, you have to read the book in its entirety to understand. Earlier, God appointed a storm to pursue Jonah. Remember that? And when he's thrown overboard, God appointed a fish to rescue Jonah. Right? So now, we're told that God appoints a plant. Remember, he built a shelter, but apparently the shelter is not completely adequate. Maybe it didn't have provided enough shade, particularly in the Middle East sun, in the summertime. So he creates a shelter. He orders a plant to grow up. We really don't know, you know, this is a very rare Hebrew word. Most translations now just say kikayon, which is the Hebrew word, because they don't know what it is. Some kind of fast-growing gourd or something that grows up quickly. It's a miraculous story, of course. And then it covers Jonah, and what happens when Jonah experiences the plant? You read the story, right? How great when things go my way, right? How wonderful when God acts to provide me, right? I, myself, and I again, with comfort. How great when God provides me a new job, a raise, a wonderful boss, a bright future. How wonderful, right? When everything is focused on me. See, he's happy. He wasn't happy about 120,000 people being saved. He's happy that his bald head is not getting sunburned. I mean, I can understand. I understand that. Okay? I've been there. Okay? That's why I always have a baseball hat when I travel somewhere. It helps, particularly when it goes in the south. Now, why would God send a plant? Again, the text tells us, again, with this little wordplay that I keep reminding you of. The text says that God sends this plant in order to save him, Jonah, from his discomfort. Same Hebrew word that means wickedness. In other words, how is God acting towards Jonah? Slow to anger. Right? Just the opposite of... Remember, was Jonah slow to anger like his God? I mean, Jonah probably wished that fire had come down the very first day. Right? 40 days. And he came out quickly and says, fool you! Right? No, he wanted that quick anger, angry God to show up. No. God behaves like Jonah's theological argument says he does, slow to anger with mercy. So Jonah is happy with the plant, and then it says that then God appointed a worm. And the worm eats up the plant, and then we're told that God is not done with the worm. Then he appoints the sirocco, the east wind that comes from the Sahara, right, and from the Arabian desert, and it's dry, and it's dusty, and it's hot. Hotter than has been the whole time Jonah's been sitting there. And then Jonah is, once again, put it mildly, ticked. What happened now? Now he's angry. So much so that for the second time, he wishes he will die. Kill me now, he says to God. I want to die. I can't stand this. Sounds like a lot of us, right? When things are going well, we praise God and we worship. When things not so well, we kind of say, doesn't God know how to run his business? I mean, doesn't God know that I'm a Presbyterian minister and I should be treated a little differently? That I shouldn't be put up with this nonsense. That I should have a little easier in life. That I should be blessed with plenty, with no needs. I mean, like I've said many times to you before, it says God really should have given me, a voice like that dude in the Allstate commercials, right? I mean, rather than this squeaky voice, that I need this microphone. He could have done a better job. Well, whatever the case may be, right? God prays that he would die. Now, again, in the story, when faced with death, the sailors pray to God. The captain, when faced with death, prays to God for life. The king of Nineveh, when faced with death, prays to God for life. And Jonah, faced with life, prays for death. He twisted around. Right? He says, I wish I would die. Can you tell that he's a little mad? So, the last words of Yahweh, God. Now, again, there was something that I skipped here because I noticed the time. There's a word play on the word Yahweh, God, as well. Jonah is drifting away so that in the middle passages, he's calling God, not by his name, but simply by the Hebrew word Elohim, the God. He's distancing himself. He's no longer part of the covenant. But now at the end, he returns, the narrator, to using God's covenantal name. You had compassion. Now God, his answer to Jonah's prayer for death, and God asked him, should you not have compassion on a plant? He says, I'm mad enough to die. Have you been like that, mad enough to die? Mad enough at God. And he says, I will never serve you again. As if we have an option. I will never rely on you again, as if we have an option, right? So God then answers his question, his statement. You had compassion on the plan for which you did not work and which you did not cause to grow, which came up overnight and perished overnight. Should I not have compassion on Nineveh, the great city, on which there are 120,000 people who do not know their left from their right hand and many animals besides? You see, behind the question, what do you hear? I created, right, those people. You did not create the plant, right? It simply was a gift from God to you. You did not even ask for the plant. I gave it to you. It was pure gift to you. And you are mad that it's no longer there. I, on the other hand, these Assyrians are children of God too. They're people that he created. Should I not have compassion on them? Now, as a reader, what do you hear behind that last question? Should I not have compassion? Now, by the way, those of you who are well-versed in Bible stories can hear an echo of Jonah in a parable of Jesus, right? The parable of the man who had two sons. And one is the prodigal that returns home. There's a great feast. Everybody rejoices. And here is big brother, who was. She's not here, so I'll use her name. The clerk of the session, the head, right, in the church. I just put kidding, of course. And he's outside pouting because there they are having a party because this sinful brother has returned home and I was perfect in everything. See the echo? The same kind of thing. What you have here, by the way, brothers and sisters, is a story about how we sometimes behave a lot like Jonah. We as a church, I'm not talking about you individually, although, as my father used to say, the shoe fits, you know. And what surprises about this story is, and I'm sure you've read it, is how it ends. Right? God asks his question, and what you say to yourself, what happened? Right? I mean, no epilogue. I mean, you want to know what happened. You wanted something made, you know, perhaps 10 years later, Jonah, right? Sitting in Nineveh with the king, buddy buddies. You want that, right? Or, like I had to say, Jonah probably still sitting there, waiting in anger that God's compassion is extended to people who are politically, socially, religiously, ethically, different than us, and we say they deserve God's punishment. They should not be receiving the same grace that we received. I mean, we look at people around the world. Our own inability to recognize this reality becomes obvious when we consider people whose lifestyle is different than yours. Different than mine, whose lifestyle may even offend, right? Some of our sensitivities as members of this community. But God doesn't look at it that way, right? He's slow to anger, slow to anger, and looks at them compassion because they too are his creation. They too are the object of his love. You see, in This has finished here. That we, like Jonah, are left to ponder this question. And to be honest, sometimes we look back at the history of the Christian church, and it has not been pretty. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned, since I am of Spanish descent, the Spanish Inquisition. And in the name of God, in the name of God, right? They tortured people. Right? Because they happen to not like to eat pork. And they assume if they don't eat pork, it must be because they're really closet Jews. They're not really Christians. That's what the Inquisition was originally targeting. It was anti-Semitism in ancient Spain. Horrible. Horrible things that we've done throughout history. So we, like Jonah, sits on the hill pondering the question, may your answer be what you wish Jonah would have done, which is embrace, right? Don't be left outside in resentment like Jonah, sulking in the sun, overwhelmed by the evil. Rejoice that God looks upon, down upon his creation with compassion, with mercy, and longs for all to enjoy fellowship with him and join the party. Let's rejoice in the Lord as he welcomes all in his name to believe in him and to bow. in service unto him. Amen.